Well, hello and welcome to Church 307. We are Wyoming's online church. We're so happy that you have taken some time today so that we can talk about what it looks like to become the people that God created us to be. So I hope that for the next 30 to 45 minutes, you will lean in and hear from God as a result of anything that we say, or maybe the Holy Spirit speaking directly to you. It's going to be a great time. Hey, if you have not yet subscribed to this channel, if you would subscribe, hit like on this button, type a comment, or whatever else would make the algorithm happy, make that happen right now. That would be awesome. All right, Grant, hit it.
Yep. Send it.
And I am sitting here with two incredible individuals. These two people have the heavy burden of raising up the next generation in our church. And Sarah McCormick, you guys know her. She has been on our podcast before, and she is the youth pastor here. And across the table from her is Nick Rassi. Nick is a high school teacher here in Gillette, and he is also a leader in our youth ministry, good friend of our family. He is practically helping to raise my sons.
They are fun. They are fun.
He's teaching him to play drums, I think. Or
they are teaching us. They are teaching our family. Yeah, he is amazing at drums. He's got a rhythm and a beat. I don't know how he gets it that young, but it's awesome to see.
Yeah, so my boys spend a lot of time at his family's house, and his daughters watch my boys, and they love it. So we've gotten really close over the years, and in our conversations and in our time in our life group, we've talked a lot about his passion for loving and supporting teenagers. He's actually preaching here at the church coming up this weekend, and so we're excited to hear how that goes and what he has to share with us. And we're reflecting on 1 John right now. And the passage that he is diving into is this 1 John 3:16 passage that really talks about how we know what love is by looking at Christ, how God himself lays down his life, and that is the type of love we're to have for each other. And the passage that we're reflecting on right now is a passage from Philippians. You say it's one of your favorite passages.
Yes, Philippians 2 is one of the best chapters in the Bible. If you've not read it, you need to go into Philippians 2, and you need to spend some time there.
Yeah, so I won't make you quote it for us. I can read it. But
all right.
Go. Philippians 2, 1 through 8 says, "Therefore, if you have any encouragement from being united with Christ, if any comfort from his love, if any common sharing in the Spirit, if any tenderness and compassion, then make my joy complete by being like-minded, having the same love, being one in spirit and of one mind. Do nothing out of selfish ambition or vain conceit. Rather, in humility, value others above yourself, not looking to your own interests, but each of you to the interests of others. In your relationships with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who being in very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross." So, who do you hate?
Who do you hate? Hang out with them.
Yeah, that's kind of the idea of this passage. There are so many times in our life that we, you know, we have this tendency to say, "I'm here, and those people over there are here." Now, I know I'm supposed to love them, but I know I'm higher than them. I'm better than them. I'm smarter than them. I'm whatever it is, and we like to elevate ourselves above other people. So I think when you read this passage, the idea here is to say, Jesus could have elevated himself, but rather than elevating himself, he decided to lower himself and to serve and to humble himself. And I think about the parable of the Good Samaritan, and I think a lot of times we just like to keep that parable there. But I think if Jesus was to come and talk to us, he would tell us the same parable, but he would switch out the characters.
Right.
Like if he was talking to a Jew today, he wouldn't say Samaritan. He would say a Palestinian. He would say the selfless Palestinian. That would be the name of the story. Or if he was talking to a conservative, he would talk about the wise liberal or if he's talking to a liberal, he'd talk about the generous conservative. What's another one? Somebody that we separate ourselves from naturally. Somebody, the Chiefs fan, talks about the courageous Bronco.
That one's dangerous.
That's kind of the idea of the whole story, is that the person that is serving is lowering themselves below somebody that they actually should hate. And I think most adults have this habit of doing this with teens. Yeah. I'm here. I've got the wisdom. I've got the age. You dumb teenagers.
Right. I always think if you want to know how strong your faith is, hang out with people that are way different than you.
Yeah.
And so it's easy to hang out with people you like. No. You like them, but
it's not just people that you think are lower than you. It's just people that are nothing like you.
Right.
You don't have culture in common with, mm-hmm. which I think all of this describes teenagers for most adults, right?
I think so.
Yeah. And I think with teens, sometimes it's even a subtle, I'm better than a teen. Mm-hmm. I'll have adults ask me, what do you do for a living? And I'll say, I'm a teacher. And instinctively they say, oh, I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
What am I sorry about that I get to work with teens? It's kind of that subtle, oh, because teens are fill in the blank. They're trouble. They're stupid. They're a negative.
Yeah. And I think a reason why so many of us, me included, see the idea of working regularly with teens as this terrifying thing is because when you are working with underaged people, intrinsic within that is this necessity of service. I have got to lower myself. I've got to serve. I've got to be like Christ. Whereas if you look at the average work environment with adults, mm-hmm. it's just this dog eat dog. Everybody's trying to get their own. Everybody's trying to take. There's nobody serving anybody.
Right.
And so working with teens requires you to lower yourself, to serve somebody that just mathematically is below you, mm-hmm. is beneath you. And a lot of people aren't willing to do that. Mm-hmm. What are other reasons why adults hate the idea of working with teens?
They're different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think culture changes, and I think a lot of adults have a hard time adjusting to the culture change. And teens, I would say, are very resilient in that way, that they are different today than they were when we were teens, but you just have to say it, culture is just going to change. It's going to be different. So I don't think you can clump them, adults and teens, all into one. I think you have to categorize them. And so really it's just a culture change, and they are changing with the culture, and us adults have to try and keep up. And so then we start thinking, well, they're just, I don't know. We just have a hard time with change, and they don't. They're in it.
So I would say from an honest self-assessment, is I look at the teens and I say, there's a lot wrong with teens. Like, they're just screwed up. Like, what is wrong with the teens? Like, what would you say to people who just objectively look at the younger generation and say, they've got a lot of problems?
And that's such a fun question, because we have to remember that every generation, the adults have always said, what's wrong with the kids? I can prove it. I've got a really fun quote, and I use this in my sermon. I've actually have this posted in my classroom, and I have it posted not for the kids, but for me to remember what it, you know, this is such an important quote for me. So it's, children today are tyrants. They contradict their parents, gobble their food, and tyrannize their teachers. So who said it? Socrates in 420 BC. He was complaining about the kids and how they are just these disrespectful kids.
I thought you must be at my dinner table last night, because I'm pretty sure I said that.
Yes. Gobble up their food. They tyrannize their teachers. And every generation says, well, these kids today. Oftentimes when adults ask me, what's wrong with the kids today? I come back with, what's wrong with society today? What's wrong with adults today? You know, we want to look at kids, but we need to step back and look at just society in general. What's wrong with the adults?
Yeah, and we live in a world that is so me-focused, everybody trying to get what they want. and adults have more power to get what they want. Teenagers are more helpless to not get what they want. They don't have the power to get what they want. And so that's causing them to act out, usually in every teenage generation, causes them to act out because they feel powerless. And so then they just do something dumb. And in that lack of ability to get what they want, the difference is adults have the power to get what they want.
Right.
At least sometimes. Mm-hmm. And so that it just plays out in a different way.
Yeah. Yeah. I see my job as an opportunity to love more because, yeah, I love teenagers all the time. I try. Do they bother me sometimes? Yeah, I'm human, but I have to take a step back and look at it as a big picture type of thing and know that teens need loving adults more now than ever, I would say.
Yeah.
And adults who see potential in them and not just constantly put them down. And so I think teachers are amazing and youth pastors and youth leaders. It's like we need a community of people who are loving these teens well.
So you said earlier that a big reason why we have this problem with teenagers is not necessarily negative things, it's just changes. Change. It's just differences. So what are some of those things that about the next generation that is just different? It's not necessarily bad. Hmm. It's just a difference that they have from adults today.
I think Nick probably sees a lot of this in classroom settings. So you
know. Yeah. Well, one thing parents, you probably notice about your own teens if you've got them or just kids in general is even things like a driver's license. I think back in the mid 90s when I was in high school, I wanted to get a driver's license. 14 years old, I want to drive. You know, that was kind of a rite of passage and all my friends. Today it's very common for teens, 16, 17 years old, not have a driver's license, and they're okay with it. They're like, they're not motivated to want to get a driver's license. And so I'm like, what's that all about? That's their world. It's different. It's not necessarily bad. It's just different.
And we wanted a driver's license because that was our access to the outside world. Well, they've got access to the outside world with them in their pockets at all times. Yep. And so they live in a different world than we lived in when we were teenagers. So you would assume that they would attempt to access that world in a different way than we do.
Yep. That was my independence from my parents was driving. It was that independence. And I think social media and things like that, they're pretty independent on those sometimes, unless, you know, parents have a grip on that. But I think that they don't feel like they need that independence because they have it in other areas of their life. So
you would also see how that change in how we access the world would affect our social cues.
Yes.
What is the difference in the way they communicate? And
so obviously as a teacher, if I see a student in the classroom doing something inappropriate, not anything terrible, I'll give them the look. You know, we'll be in the middle of a conversation. I'll give them that parent look, that adult look that when we were kids, we knew that was a social cue. Stop doing that behavior. Kids will miss that cue a lot of times. And I'll talk to them after class and I'll say, okay, hey, what was going on there? And I gave you the look, and they'll be like, what look? Like they don't understand that look. And so I'll explain it to them because their social cues are different.
Yeah.
Sarah, you were talking a little bit about communication too. We talked a little bit about that. What do you see?
I think it was just a few weeks ago at church on Sunday, and I had a teen bring her friend, and she came to introduce me to her friend, and I introduced myself. I'm Sarah. I'm the youth pastor here. And she just stood there and looked at me. And I was like, and your name is, like, the next thing you say is usually your name. And I've experienced that a few times with teens. It's just like, the communication with adults, I think, scares them. Or, like, even with other teens that they've never talked to before, like, they just have a hard time going up to people, parents, other teens or adults or teachers. I think you even said teachers. You guys have to teach that now in school. Yes. Which is just, in my mind, is just like, what?
Yeah, you know? We teach students how to communicate with adults. If there's something wrong, maybe their grade isn't right, they'll a lot of times just be like, well, my grade's not right, but I'm not going to talk to the teacher because they're intimidated. And so we'll teach them, how do you go up to a teacher and talk about that grade? I've even talked to you, Mike. We've shared with our own daughters if they're at a restaurant and they get something wrong on the order, not a big deal, whatever, they can fix it. I'll encourage my daughters to go up to the front counter or talk to the wait staff and say, hey, can you fix this, please? Because our daughters were intimidated to be able to do something like that.
Yeah, I remember the first time you told us that we should have our kids do the ordering at a restaurant. It's been huge for them. And Lincoln has like recently shown an incredible ability to communicate with adults because we've forced him to exercise that muscle.
Yes.
And I think you can see this. It's not just in a difference between teens and adults. I mean, you look at the difference between the way a military parent communicates to his children and normal people communicate to their children. Like, there's a difference there, and growing up in that setting affects the children and the way that they communicate. And we look at the next generation, and most of their communication, the social media communication, is much more one way. Now, there might be a response, but it's like I'm teaching myself on social media how to present myself. And so it's more a one-way communication. And I've seen positives from that. I mean, we see teenagers who've really taken interest in learning how to present themselves well and put on communicate well and look they've really paid attention to their look and like
professionalism.
That's what I'm trying to say. Yeah. And so there are some positives that come as a result of it, but it's just different. And so if you have any more of those that are differences, but not necessarily negatives, go ahead and jump in with those. Mm-hmm. But we can also talk about some things that are different about the next generation that are negatives, mm-hmm. that are bad. Mm-hmm. So what are some of those things that we look at the next generation and say, okay, that's different in a bad way?
I think isolation. Before we jump into that one, one other one. I don't know if this is necessarily bad or different, but taking feedback.
Yeah.
Teenagers really struggle today with how to take criticism. When you talk about like a military dad, you know, think back in the 1960s or whatever, the dad just said, this is so, and gave them feedback and told them, you know, go mow the lawn because I said so. Kids today, they struggle with feedback. Mm. They take it as, if you're giving them feedback, you're giving them correction, they take it as a judgment, you know, they take it as criticism. I'm not trying to judge you. I'm not trying to cause you any pain. I'm just showing you, hey, maybe this is a way we can do this. Even with my own kids, I've struggled with that. And so how you give them feedback is really important.
They just get really defensive and they feel attacked.
Yes.
If you give them any negative feedback at all.
Yes. Almost shut down in a way. Like, okay, you hate me. No, that's not what I'm saying. I love you, actually. Yeah. I'm trying to help you.
So knowing that reality, not necessarily judging the reality right now, just knowing it, what does that tell us adults about how we should communicate to teenagers? No. Okay, if I know that you're going to be easily offended, what are some strategies we can use to make sure we're communicating in a way so that they don't just shut down and we've got no further communication?
So for sure, I front load things. At youth group, with students in the classroom, I have to front load it. I have to tell them I'm going to give them feedback. I have to tell them, you know, hey, here's what I'm seeing. I'm not trying to judge you. I'm not trying to make you feel bad. Here's an area we can improve on. It could be anything from a homework assignment, a writing assignment, to even behaviors in the classroom. You know, if a student is struggling with organization and their backpack's a mess, and I tell them, hey, your backpack's a mess. Oh, you're hurting my feelings. Whereas, okay, hey, let's see if we can make this better so that you can be more organized and do it in a loving way. Mm. But I really have to front load it a lot more now than I did, say, 5 years ago. Mm.
We talk, even in communication on staff here, we always talk about if we have some negative feedback to share, we always talk about sandwiching. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know if this is unique to us or who does this. I don't know where we got this, but encouragement sandwich. We always say you share something encouraging, something uplifting, and then you give the negative feedback and then follow it up with something else. Encouragement. You create an encouragement sandwich. Wow. So like I got the negative feedback in there, but I started the conversation and I ended the conversation on a positive note, and it usually has good.
Yeah.
So what are some other, what else would you say about encouraging the next generation?
I think you talk about this in your sermon about just words of encouragement.
Yes.
And that's not just verbal, but taking the time to handwrite a note. Mm-hmm. I think earlier talking about a student you did that for, and you saw a complete shift in the attitude. So I don't know if you want to tell that story.
But. I will. The two words that I want to be known for, if I'm living in Christ, I definitely want to be that servant. But the two words that have been really rated in my heart this last year, last couple of years, is just to encourage, because I think kids and adults just need encouragement. The world doesn't seem very encouraging right now. And then challenge, to challenge people to grow, to challenge people to develop their faith. And so like the story you're asking about, I had a ninth grade guy, and I won't share his name, obviously. He was a kid who came into the class. He was very downtrodden, very standoffish, didn't really want to communicate with other students. I would try and communicate with him. He just really could tell he was kind of that whipped puppy. And I hate to say that, but just a really downtrodden kid. Long story short, I was trying to find something positive, something I can encourage him. And he told me, this is the first conversation we really had, that he wanted to pass the class. And I was like, okay, so you want to pass the class. So I took the opportunity just to write him a note. I just wrote him a handwritten note, left it on his desk, and I told him in that note that I was proud of him. Mm. The next day, he came back, because he picked up the note at the end of class. He came back, and he was just a different kid. He wanted to sit next to me. He wanted to talk to me. We went down to the library for a project that week, and he sat next to me the entire week and was just wanting to talk. I don't think he'd ever heard someone give him a word of encouragement to say, I'm proud of you. Mm-hmm. And he wound up passing the class. It was so cool. We've got a really neat relationship now, and we talk quite a bit. But yeah, he just needed that word of encouragement.
I think a lot of people... A lot of adults shy away from that idea of encouraging teenagers because we see it as synonymous with lowering the bar. It's like, I'm scared to coddle them too much or mm-hmm. be too kind or be too generous to them because I don't want to lower the bar. And I love how you followed up by challenge, is because the idea of encouragement is not to lower the bar. It's actually to prepare them to succeed. It's prepare them to rise to the occasion, not to lower the bar. And I see encouragement more as a coach on the sideline, as somebody's playing in the game, encouraging them to succeed. Sometimes that encouragement is more harsh and sometimes it's more uplifting, but they're more spurring them on to success rather than they are lowering the bar of expectations.
Yes. New life, we say, you know, come as you are, but we don't leave it there. Become who God's created you to be. And that's exactly the challenge. If we set that bar low, I have found that kids will live up to that low expectation. If you call them stupid, if you call them dumb, if you call them lazy, why would they be anything else? Mm-hmm. If we give them the opportunity and we challenge them and say, here's what I see in you. I can see you're going to succeed in this area of life, and paint them a picture of here's a future that, you know, you can become something awesome.
Yeah.
Encourage them. They need that. I had a girl who in class, ninth grade girl, I'll give you an example. She came into class. She was failing all of her classes. She was just struggling in life and didn't know where she wanted to go. And so I had a conversation with her, and she just flat out said, I don't know what I'm supposed to do in this life. And she was in the library. We were in the library working on a project, and there's a bunch of animals in the library. There's bunnies and lizards and all these different animals in cages.
There are animals in the library.
Animals in the library, yeah. So our librarian, she has rabbits in a cage. She's got a couple different lizards. And the kids can play with the animals. They can actually interact with them, which is kind of cool. So she was in class, and she was playing with this rabbit, and she was smiling. She had the rabbit in her arms, and all these kids came up to her. And this is the first time I'd seen this girl smile all year long. And I'm not joking. Like, she had not smiled the entire year. And so that was my aha moment. That was my encouragement and challenge. And I went up to her and I said, hey, I know what you can do with your life. You can work with animals. You're just a natural at it. And she's like, well, what would that look like? I said, what if you became a vet or even a vet technician? And she's like, well, I don't know about that. So I did a little bit of research, showed her some schools, showed her some, you know, a possible future. That's what she's actually going after right now. Wow. She's already started taking classes at Thunder Basin to pursue that future, and she never saw it. She didn't understand, like, that could be her future. So that's seeing cool. something in that kid, giving them that encouragement.
Yeah.
I think a theme I hear in the things that you do with these teens is intentionality. So you watch for them to light up when they're doing something, and then you run with it. And so I think that might be another way that we as adults can help the next generation is really focus in on their life too,
yeah,
and see what they're passionate about and then encourage them in that instead of putting them down and saying,
yep,
you know. So I think intentionality is huge, yeah, with
so good,
with the next generation. I mean, anyone really. But
you think about it. I mean, how did Christ see the disciples? You know, they were just fishermen. They were tax collectors. And he saw, okay, that's where they're at. But I can bring them, I can raise them up, and they're going to become future leaders.
Mm, that's so good. Yeah. I have my oldest son is type A. He's a hard personality. He's strong-willed and opinionated. And our main thing in our house is kindness. It's really honor, but make it more elementary for our kids. We always say our rule is kindness. Everything comes down to kindness. Are you kind or not? And my oldest son really struggles with kindness. And so rather than always beating him up for not being kind, since he was really young, I have always said to him, I would say, Lincoln, you are such a kind kid. Right now you're not acting like it, but I know that you are a kind kid. And so speaking that into him is I am claiming that without actually seeing the evidence yet. Like, I'm saying you're a kind kid, but I don't, have not seen you be a kind kid much. Mm-hmm. And we have really started to see a change in him recently in the past year of the ability to be kind and generous and loving in with his language. And he's really changed in that. And I think it's largely because, not entirely because, largely because we spoke that into him and we gave him that positive affirmation.
Absolutely.
Yep.
I was going to say, I had another thought about, you had a quote, I think, about expectations or just how when you set the bar low, that's what they'll reach. You said that earlier,
yes.
But if you set the bar high, they can do it.
Yes.
They just need someone to do it and
so
to invite them into that world. And so I noticed this. So Youth Sunday, I asked a group of teens to serve. And they were like, me, serve? Yeah, you are welcome to be on the host team. And you can greet people. You can make coffee. And I could tell that they were like, all right, what time do we need to be here? It's like, oh, cool. Okay. It was kind of like, to me, I was like, oh, I should ask them to do this stuff,
yes,
more. Like, we should ask them to serve, to be sacrificial to, and not just put them off as, oh, you can sit in the teen section and we'll just, tell you to be quiet when you're being loud.
Amen. That's so good.
So
when we talk about the negatives of the next generation, would you see there being an underlying issue, problem that is causing all these other surface level issues to arise?
Yes, and we Sarah and I have talked a lot about that with youth group and what we see as a concern of ours, and we see this, and I'd say probably the biggest one right now is isolation. Mm-hmm. Teens that get isolated from community, and that can happen in a lot of different ways.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I think a big one is just social media, their phones. I mean, they have what they think is real community, which we as adults might look at and be like, you're just in your room all the time, which is true. Like, kind of like you said, like driver's license, not as many of them want to do that, which is fine. But when you look down at the root of what is causing all these like differences, not all of them are negative, but yeah, isolation is big because they feel like they're in community, but that community is such a not in-person community.
Yep, right.
And so
not real community.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. When we've had students at youth group and I've had students in the classroom that get in crisis, that is the number one theme, is that isolation. And I always ask my students, I ask them, do you have a trusted adult that knows what's going on in your life? Do you have someone? Because I don't need to know every detail of their life as a teacher, but I'll ask them, do you have a parent? Do you have a counselor who knows what's going on in your life? Mm-hmm. And if they say they have nobody, that's the isolation. And I'm like, okay, well, we need to get help. And it could be an addiction. It could be drug abuse. It could be alcohol. It could be just a lot of things. But that isolation is the underlying cause. Mm-hmm.
So I'm assuming the way we counteract this isolation problem is not by forcing Mark Zuckerberg to shut down Meta.
Why not? No.
So what do we do? I'm assuming it's largely on the shoulder of parents, right? I mean, what does a parent do recognizing their teenager is retreating into isolation, spending more time in their bedroom alone? Like, what is the strategy here?
So I loved what Sarah said with intentionality. You know, we have to be intentional. It's easy to, oh, our kids are just in the bedroom and we get caught up in our own lives. We have to be intentional. One of the things that I encourage teens a lot, even in the classroom, is just having dinner. You know, you see it. I mean, how many stories of Jesus do we see at some kind of dinner?
All of them.
Yeah. You know, and that's such an important part of life. We can look back and say, oh, the glory days or whatever. I don't tend to do that. I just encourage kids, have dinner. You know, parents, make a time set aside, you know, being intentional about that. And have those dinner conversations.
Yeah, there is something spiritual that happens at a dinner table, no. Metaphorically or whatever. But the idea of gathering together, phones aside, right? I mean, I've so often at our dinner table had the temptation, like, I felt my pocket buzz, felt my pocket buzz. So now when I get home, it is phone on the charger.
Yep.
We don't touch that thing. Mm-hmm. It's over there until after dinner time. And remove the distractions.
Yeah. I think because I grew up in a family that did not do that. We didn't sit around and talk. And, you know, we would sit there and my dad would watch the news. And it would be like, you're quiet until everything is off your plate. And so when I was in junior high, I met a friend whose family was very intentional about every Sunday after church, or even, you know, like you can go out and hang out with your friends, but dinner's at 6 and you will be here. And I know that I looked forward to that meal more than my friend did because she had to do it every day. But I was like, this is awesome. Like I became a different person, I would say, because I saw what that actually looked like. And it's like, this is what I've been missing, you know? So now raising our own children, my husband and I have, you know, decided like we will eat dinner together every night, even if they're there for 5 minutes because their attention span is short. But starting that habit early, I think, is good. But also, if you haven't done that, I think starting any time is better than not starting at all. But
yeah, we've actually added a devotion to dinner time now. So after everybody has eaten, I have a little devotional book that we pull out. We've also done the Jesus Storybook Bible and read through that.
Yeah. Such a good book.
So we finish our dinner, and then Titus calls them demos. I don't know why. Devo, devotional. But he is always saying, can we do our demo? Can we do our demo?
Yeah, that's cool.
Because he knows when the demo's over, then we can get up and he can go play. But and so we have added that on to the second half. But we could never have done that when they were really little.
Right.
But they're just at the age where, and then what I'll do is I'll read the demo, and then at the end of it, I'll ask both of them, okay, what did it say? And they both have to tell me what it said in their own words, and then after they do, that just causes that, otherwise they'll just tune out.
Right.
And that just makes them listen.
And I think it looks different for younger kids versus teenagers, but it's got to be something where you're intentional with having that dinner. I ask my students when we're in U.S. history, because we'll talk about different things throughout the past, and I'll ask my students, how many of you eat dinner together? And I have in a class of 25 students, I'll have anywhere from 6-7 students that will tell me they go home, even if mom prepares dinner or dad prepares dinner, they will take their dinner and they will go eat in their bedroom.
Yeah.
You know, I think about like in the 90s when, oh, we're sitting in front of the TV eating.
Yep.
You know, this is where individual kids, a family of 4 or 5, and the kids will go eat in their bedrooms. I never would have thought of that as a kid. Like that never would have been something was even allowed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just so obviously unhealthy. Is it too late? Is always the question I wrestle with parents is this issue of, well, we've never done that. And, or my kids already have phones, the cats are out of the bag and I can't, they got social media. So I've lost that battle. And I think the, is it too late question is the one that comes up so often with parents who feel helpless to do anything now with their teenagers who have kind of been lost.
I think the answer to that is always, it's only too late if you never start. And so I think, starting starting, just starting. Even if it's I had a parent who started taking his son out to breakfast once a week before school, and they were reading through a book, and it was just about how do we safely use our cell phones. And they would just start the conversation. Now, had he done that, the kid had had his phone for 3 years before then, but then the dad was finally like, all right, let's talk about how to use it safely, even though you've used it. But, and it wasn't just here, read this book, or it wasn't just, here's what you need to do. It was, hey, let's go talk about it. We'll read the book together and have a conversation about it once a week and see how we're doing. I don't know. So I think intentionality, yeah, again.
Exactly. It's, I mean, it's like anything. If we want to get in shape and we've not for years, well, you got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
Going back to what Sarah said with the letters, you know, I've encouraged so many of my parents to write a letter to their teenager. You know, in the spur of the moment, it might be hard to, what do I want to say? But if you sit down and you write that letter, you know, this is what, even I've screwed up here as a parent, but this is what I want to do better. You know, kids will see that authenticity and they will realize, okay, let's work towards that.
Yeah. I've had this conversation with parents about the sex talk. They're like, I never had a sex talk with my kids and I'm pretty sure they're gone too far or whatever. Like, we're, the cat's out of the bag there as well. So what's the point of a sex talk? And I'm like, no, like, okay, mistakes have been made. You go back, you start from the beginning, you have the talk, you teach the lessons and you make sure that you've done the right things. One issue that I have a hard time not bringing up in this conversation is sports, is activities, because it's such a all-encompassing, overwhelming reality in so many people's lives who have teenagers, because we have made sports a god in our high schools. I mean, it is everything. What's your sport? What's your activity? And that we just center our lives around these activities that we get our – and I'm not one who says, no, don't get your kids into activities. My kids are in activities. I'm cool with that. But we always – have to make sure that they are not lord over our family.
Yes.
That God is lord over our family. And if those things want to bow to the God of our family, they can, but they have to bow. And recognizing what it looks like to raise teenagers when, okay, we don't have time for dinner. We got to go straight to practice after school. And we don't have time for all the things that you're talking about. Well, you have to make time.
Yeah. How do you be in the world but not of the world?
Yeah.
That's such a challenge that we all wrestle with.
Yeah,
I love the idea of not allowing that activity to lord over us.
Yeah,
have to be intentional.
I think I was just having a conversation with somebody, and they talked about, well, our schedule's so busy, so I'm gonna have to step away from serving for a while. So like church was the first thing off their schedule, but did they stop going to the baseball practices? Probably not. Did they, you know? So it's like, I think it's a mind shift of priorities of, like you said, it's Lord of, you know, our house. We are Christians. We go to church, and then everything besides that is, you know, secondary, which I think is a good way to look at it. But I think it all depends on what you've set as your family, you know, what's important, what's not. Because a lot of times, you know, kids will get in trouble and the first thing they take away is youth group.
Yeah.
And I always want to just be like, please let them come. Like,
yeah, I've never understood that. We've had several parents, their kid does something, gets in trouble, and they're like, yeah, you can't come to youth group. I'm like, that'd be the one place I'd want them to go, to the church.
Yeah.
Right.
How do you feel about parents requiring youth group of their teenagers? Like, should parents require their teenagers to, I didn't prep you for this question, but.
And that's a great question. You know, there are things that we require of our kids all the time that they maybe not understand. You know, we've got to train them up. And there are things that are our expectations. We can't empower kids in the sense, well, you do whatever you want. We've got to empower them, encourage them in a way that we know is God-honoring. Yeah. And so, yes, I would encourage parents to say, yeah, I want you to go to youth group. With my daughters, we looked at different churches, you know, what youth group is going to fit them. I love our youth group. I want them to be connected some way.
Yeah.
I want them to be connected. And so if a parent comes to me and says, well, this youth youth group isn't going to work. Okay. But how is your kid getting connected in a spiritual sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Is it a Sunday morning, which I love them coming to church? Is it, getting involved in God and Griddles? Is it getting involved in some kind of ministry?
I think I like what you say when you talk about your daughters, because you'll say, their spiritual life, I know all about it. They're doing great. And they're here on a Sunday, and you're invested in their spiritual walk. You're not just watching them from a distance. Where they're at. And I think that's a good indicator too of for parents to check in, like, hey, I saw you reading your Bible this morning. Awesome job. Or kind of things, just be involved in their spiritual life too, not just their sports life or their school life, or be intentional about their spiritual walk as well, and encourage them when you see them pouring time into it.
As a parent who only has young kids, this is a difficult conversation for me to have, because from my perspective, I'm like, just say no, or just say yeah. Like, tell them what they have to do and what they can't do. I'm sure that's much more complicated when you're talking about teenagers than when you're parenting kids. I mean, we've made rule, no technology ever in any bedroom. Like, we don't ever put technology in bedrooms. And, but I don't know.
We have to set safeguards. If we allow our kids to do whatever they want, my wife and I've used this analogy. If we let them do whatever they want, my daughters would have huge bowls of sugar in the morning, just pure sugar, just eat it, Yeah. So we have to set some limits. As they get older, the other hope is that has to become their own. I know my daughter, Julia, she started a life group for the 20-somethings, and she's super passionate about, okay, these kids need to make their own faith. How many kids go to youth group and then leave the church once they leave high school?
Yep.
Is that because, well, it was forced on them and they never made their faith their own?
Yeah.
So I definitely am passionate about that as well, as how do you encourage that kid to, okay, this isn't your parents' faith now. This is you getting at the Bible. This is you asking those tough questions about faith.
Yeah, that's awesome. Well, guys, thanks. We're out of time.
Great job.
Thanks for joining us.
Well, teenagers are awesome.
They are awesome. Encourage them. Love on them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Build into them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And thank you for joining us today. We're going to keep diving into this topic next week. We're starting some new interviews, and we're going to be interviewing different individuals about topics that they are experts on. So it's going to feel a little bit different. We're going to do one-on-ones for the month of August. And so I hope you will tune in for those podcast episodes. And make sure that you like and subscribe and do all that other stuff. If you did not like this video, make sure you click the thumbs down button twice to just be efficient there. And as you go, you should know that Jesus loves you unconditionally, and he died to give you new life.